Hi, I'm Sonia. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, you guys. I had the privilege of speaking with Bob T., who is our speaker for tonight. He has 25 years of sobriety. Pretty awesome. Good job. So Bob was telling me that he's from the Midwest and moved to Orange County, where he sobered up. And then he met his third wife online, and she's from Hanford, and then they moved to Visalia because there wasn't like a whole lot of meetings and stuff going on out there. I asked him what he likes to do for fun, and he said he's retired, he loves to travel around the world, and he gave me a bit of information about how he was really interested in going to meetings. So he's been to meetings all over the United States, in London, Rome, Thailand, and I asked him like what the similarities and differences were between the meetings, you know, here and over there. And he said they're surprisingly similar in that they have, you know, big books, they do chip meetings, and they give hugs. And I thought that was really cool that no matter where you go around the world, that, you know, there's something familiar that you can reach out to and feel comfortable with. So that was really cool information. He said they also do the Serenity Prayer. Very cool stuff. Let's see. His advice to the newcomer is do not give up before the miracle happens. So thank you so much, Bob. Thanks for being here. We're excited to hear your story. And with that, Bob T. from Visalia.
Hi. My name is Bob. I'm an alcoholic. At the first of this year, I saw Bill at another meeting, and we were talking, and I don't know how it came up, but it came up about my birthday being in August. And he said to me, how would you like to speak at our meeting? And I said, you know, when you got commitments that far out, you can say yes because you don't have to worry about making them for a long time. So I agreed, and so thought nothing more about it until 2 weeks ago. I thought, you know, I probably ought to go to that meeting because I don't normally go to it. I should go to it and see what it's about, see what the format's like, and so I went over to the ICE house, and did anybody understand it? I went over to the ICE house, and at 7 o'clock, and the place was locked up. So, a couple of messages to Bill, I found out where it was, and so I'm here tonight. And I don't know why I get nervous when I have to speak. I don't have to speak. It's a privilege and an honor. But I always get nervous. And you know what? We're all together. We all got the common gene, and there's no reason I should get nervous. But I do. So instead of worrying about what I was going to say, I just decided that I would turn it over to God. And I said a prayer to God that if he had something to say to someone in this meeting, and he wanted to use me to be the medium, his tool, then so be it. So, guess what? God doesn't have anything to say to you people. I remember when I first came to a meeting here in Visalia about 20 years ago, and there was a fellow, they call him Paradise Jim, and he just spoke spontaneously. He just said, "This meeting is really dead. We need a joke." And That was my first time at that meeting. I thought, well, that's a good way to break the ice. I got a joke. So I said, I got a joke. He said, okay. So the joke was about a woman that was walking on the beach down in Orange County, and she down in Laguna, and she ran across a dark glass covered bottle. So she took it home, shined it up, and when she was shining it up, poof, out popped a genie. Big green genie. And he said, my God, child, thank you so much. I've been cooped up in that bottle for 500 years. He said, and I have the power to grant wishes. I'll grant you whatever you want. And she said, he said, make it big. It's okay. I don't care. Just anything. So she thought, she said, well, you know, I've always wanted to go to Hawaii, but I'm deathly afraid of flying, and I'm deathly afraid of boats. So how would you like to build me a highway to Hawaii? The genie said, oh, my God, woman. Oh, do you realize that's international water? There's tons of permits that have to be got. And, oh, that would just be such a deal. Is there anything else that you could possibly want? She says, yes, there is. My husband's an alcoholic, and I don't understand him. He just does weird, crazy things. And just like yesterday, he's watching a football game. I said, it's time for dinner. He said, okay, dear, it's the 2-minute warning. She says, and 30 minutes later, he's still watching the ball game. So can you help me understand my alcoholic husband? And the genie thought for me, do you want that road to be 2-lane or 4-lane? There were a couple of people on the air, sitting on an airplane, waiting to take off, and this one woman volunteered to her seatmate that she was a widow, that her husband had died. And the guy says, oh, that's terrible. How did he die? She says, well, he drank all of his life. He drank really a lot. And the doctor said that the alcohol had killed him. The guy says, whoa, that's too bad. Did he try AA? Did he know about AA? She says, oh, no, he wasn't that bad. Takes a while. Most people talk about the first time they had a drink. I don't remember the first time I had a drink, but it wasn't because I was drunk. It was because I was too small. And I don't remember. It was told to me by members of my family, my aunts and uncles, because I was about 2-3 years old. And every Saturday night, all my uncles would get together in my grandmother's house in the kitchen and play cards. And they'd drink beer and they'd drink whiskey. And apparently there was a shot of whiskey and a bottle of beer sitting on a TV table by the poker table. And I came up to it and I tipped the shot glass up to my lips. And supposedly I said, whoa, whiskey hot. And I didn't have another drink till I was in high school. And I started when I was about 16. and drinking on the weekends, and alcohol made me feel so much better. So it took away so many fears, so many anxieties, so many worse feelings of no worth. And so I wasn't stupid. I just kept doing it because it made me feel that way. And I got to college. I did pretty well in college, but I drank a lot. I took my first job out of college, and I was very driven to do the best I could do. And in that job with AT&T, I was a salesman when I started. 6 months later, I was promoted to account salesman. 6 months after that, I was appointed to district sales manager. And there was a guy that had a master's degree, came in to my department, and he started at the same level that I was. So I thought, well, I need to go get a master's degree so I can be even more promotable. So that's what I did. I went back to school and got an MBA. And drinking wasn't a big part of my life then. It was there, but I probably drank like a normal drinker. So it was, I didn't go back to AT&T. They offered me a job when I graduated, but I took a job in St. Louis with a company called Emerson Electric. And Emerson Electric is a large company that makes a lot of things that you probably don't even know about, like incinerator, garbage disposals, ridge tool, Louisville ladder, Talcott lighting products, and a lot of motors for big compressors. Anyway, with this job, I had 5 promotions in 7 years, and that still wasn't enough for me. I ventured out on my own, or not on my own, and with my one of my mother's husbands. My mother had many husbands in her life. I don't call them stepfathers because there's too many of them. But one of her husbands had this business, and he offered me a percentage of it to join him. And so that's what I did. And after that, about a year later, he and my mother got divorced, and I was forced out of the company. And that's when I started to go downhill. That's when things just, everything turned to crap. And I couldn't get a job, and I didn't know what I wanted to do if I had a job. And the one thing I did start to do a lot more is drink. And got my first DUI. When I got my first DUI, it was a $25 fine. It was $15 for the fine, and it was $10 for court cost. Now, they had electricity back then. But that started a long string of DUIs. And I don't know, some people brag about how many they got. I don't know how many I have. But I was a blackout drinker. There's a lot of things I don't remember. And do you call it a DUI when a cop stops you and says, "Oh, you're only two blocks from home. You go ahead. Get home." Is it a DUI when you run into the back of a car or a truck, shear off your headlights and you're new Corvette, and the cop takes you in the police station at 5:30 in the afternoon, and you sit there till 11 o'clock at night. By that time, the alcohol's got out of your system, and then he gives you the test, and you don't blow a DUI. And I, to this day, I don't know why he did that. I didn't know that guy. So, but I still got my share that goes on your record. And one time I got two in a week, and they were so close together that the DMV thought they made a mistake. And they call it a ghost ticket. They said there was another ticket following this one, and so we'll disregard it. So they forgot about one DUI, one less on my record. Eventually, things got better in the job world. I got back into swing of things, and I was working for a guy in Buffalo, New York, managing his construction, his door division of his construction company, and I did that for about 8 years. Went through two blizzards in Buffalo, and one night I was out drinking with the boys, and they took me home. My car was left at the bar, but I didn't remember where I parked it, and the snow had covered all the cars. And I didn't find my car till 2 days later. But one thing was consistent is I just seemed to get worse with drinking. And one time I tried to stop. Back in 87, I stopped. I had decided to stop at the beginning of the year, so I did. And I went through all the year till October. And my wife, second wife at that time, and I and another couple went to Hawaii. And the place we stayed had a champagne brunch on Sunday. And I don't know what happened. I just, there I go. There's a bottle of champagne in front of me, and my glass is full, and I'm drinking it. And it just seemed like the most natural thing in the world. 10 months, it just poof. And by the end of the week, I was drinking martinis and staggering around on the beach just like a drunk, which is what I was. I like to think that some people come in and out of AA a lot of times before it catches, and I like to think that I came in here and I stayed and didn't go back out. But that's not exactly true, because in 1984, I had a DUI in L.A., and the lawyer thought it'd be a good idea if I went to AA as a show of good faith to a judge that I was a good, upstanding citizen and didn't deserve a DUI. But California was really cracking down, and it really probably didn't make any difference what I did, but I agreed that I would go to an AA meeting, or however many he thought I should go to. So I went to one in Paramount, California. And the name of it is the Paramount Alano Club, but it's known as the Snake Pit. And I went in there during the noon hour for the noon meeting. And it was just ruckus and chaos. And there was three guys playing keep away with an old-timer's hat. There was two guys in the corner that were bullying another guy. there was two women laying around on the, rolling around on the floor, wrestling and slugging each other. You know, and I'm looking around, I'm seeing all these signs. One day at a time, easy does it. Think. And then I saw the one I wanted. It said exit. I took it. And I didn't go back. And then the other time, I really came in this program in 1983. But I had a little problem with Valium. And I know this is an AA meeting, but this is what happened. This is part of my story. I went back for my stepmother's funeral, and from the time I got on the plane in Orange County to the time I got home in Orange County, I don't remember what the hell went on. It was 5 days. So that's why I changed my sobriety date to August 18th, 1994. I think sponsorship is very important in AA, and I had one of the best sponsors I could ever want to have. His name was Dr. Paul, and he's well known in Orange County and Laguna Beach. He has a story in the big book. It used to be on page 449 in the third edition. In the fourth edition, it's on page 407. And one of the things that he's known for is his explanation or his statement about acceptance. And I'd like to read that. You can all read it out of your big book whenever you want, but I have it here, and I think it's important. He says, and acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I'm disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be at the moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world, as on what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. Well, with a sponsor like that, you can imagine that you don't get by with very much. And I remember one time, before I asked him to sponsor me, I was going to a meeting. I was going to a lot of meetings. When I first came into AA, I probably went to over 100 meetings in the first month. And it just was, I didn't have a job, so it wasn't conflicting with work. And it just seemed like it was a flow of progression. It was something that God knew I needed. And so one of the meetings I went to, this woman that I got to know asked me if I had a sponsor, and I said, no. No. And she says, well, we're going to the meeting Wednesday night down at Laguna Beach at the speaker's meeting. Dr. Paul will be there. Why don't you ask him to be your sponsor? And I knew about Dr. Paul. And I said, no, he wouldn't want to sponsor me. Why would he want to sponsor me? Why don't you ask him? So anyway, I went to that meeting, and after the meeting, she came up to me and says, he's over there. Why don't you go ask him? I said, I don't think so. Go on. So I went over and stood in line. There was a long line to greet him. And came my turn, and I said, hi. I said, my name's Bob. I'm a colleague. And I was wondering if I could ask you a question. I'd like to know if you would sponsor me. He said, how long have you been sober? I said, oh, about 6 months. He says, well, here's my number. call me every day, and we'll talk about it. So that's what I did. I started calling him, and he told me there were, after we'd been together for a while, he told me there were five things that he wanted me to do every day. He said one of them is call me every day. You know, that sounds easy. You know, you got all day to make a phone call. But I wouldn't want to call in the morning because he might be sleeping late. Noon, he's probably having lunch. Afternoon, well, maybe he's taking a nap. 5 o'clock comes around, well, he's probably having supper. And then 8 o'clock comes, well, it's too late to call today. And finally, I kicked all that crap out of my head and just started calling him every day. The second thing he told me, he wants you to go to a meeting every day. And he said, well, he didn't say go to a meeting every day. He said go to a meeting like you drank. Well, for me, that was every day. The third thing he told me, you need to become more transparent in your life. He said, for years, you've built up fences, doors, walls, so people won't see you, people won't know you. You need to let people know who you are. You need to become involved in life. And, you know, that's not the way I was brought up. You don't let people know about you. You keep secrets and you keep everything to yourself. You don't let anything out about what you care about or what you think about. That's taboo. The fourth thing he told me to do is do something good for somebody else every day. And then this is the clincher, the kicker. And don't tell anybody about it. You know, when I do something good, I want people to know about it. Hey, you know, I gave a $100 donation to the Salvation Army. Look how good I am. Look what I did. And so he said, every day, and it doesn't have to be something big. He said it can be something as small as just going up to somebody after a meeting and saying, hey, I like to hear what you had to share. Thank you. It meant a lot to me. Or somebody that's hurting and you go up to them and say, is there anything I can do to help? What's going on in your life? And just these little things on a daily basis can make a difference. The fifth thing he told me to do was to read something out of the big book every day. Well, you know, there's over 500 pages in that big book, and there's not one picture of Bill W., Dr. Bob. There's no pictures in that book. But anyway, I started doing that. I started reading. He said, you don't have to read a chapter. You don't have to read the whole book. Read a page. Just read something every day. Do it on a consistent basis until it becomes a habit. He says, all these things are habits. That's what I did. Life got better. He told me once that he thought I was too judgmental. And right away, I judged that he didn't know what the hell he was talking about. And I stewed about it for about a week. And I was working then, and I had a business trip to Las Vegas. And whenever I have trips out of town, I always had places I went to for meetings. And this one meeting was called the KISS, Keep It Simple, Stupid meeting. And I went in, and it had been a bar. So you go in, and there's the bar part, and in the back part is the ballroom or the party room, and that's where the meeting was. So you go in, and you sit down, and on one wall, the whole wall, his pictures of his paintings and sketches and things of alcoholics and in dire situations, and it's just kind of a depressing picture, mural. And in the middle of that mural, in big letters about 6 feet high, says, "Judge not." I thought, what the hell, is my sponsor following me around here? I never forgot that. Never forgot that. And I try not to judge. I try a lot of things. I'm still working on a lot of things. I'm still working on my character defects. My sponsor had told me that there were Well, this damn timer's off. I just have to kind of watch my watch. He said there's four types of sobriety. He said you can look at it like a baseball diamond. First base is your physical sobriety. Second base is your mental sobriety. Third base is your emotional sobriety. And home plate is your spiritual sobriety. And after a while of being sober, you get so... I'm pretty comfortable with my physical sobriety. I don't think I'm going to drink a six-pack of Bud and jump out of a bush on a nun or something like that. My mental sobriety is pretty good. I know that I've got obligations. Bills have to be paid. Mortgage's got to be paid. Money got to go in the bank, blah, blah, blah. I'm pretty good at that. My spiritual sobriety, I have a good relationship with my higher power today, I think. I tell him what I want, and he tells me what he'll give, and they usually don't agree, but they get close. He usually knows better than I do what I need the most or what I don't need. But my emotional sobriety still today causes me problems. It's just really difficult sometimes to cope with what comes down. And I don't like to be told what to do. That's just been something in my life that just bugs me that people tell me what to do. You know, I can get ready to take out the trash, and I can be right there ready to pick up the bag, and my wife will say, "You need to take out the trash." But I got to find something to do for half an hour because I don't want to do what she told me to do. The other day I was in Lifestyles, coming out. I was in the parking lot leaving, and I was in my car. I had started the car up, and I happened to glance down at my cell phone. And I guess I was there a little bit longer than I thought, because I hear this beep, beep. I look around. Here's this guy in the driveway. He wants my parking place. He's telling me, "Get out, get out." Well, we both got to sit there for an hour or so until we die before I'm going to move. You know these little card readers that you've got to put your card in and take it out? It's always this little message that says, "Remove card rapidly." Remove card rapidly. It doesn't say, "Please remove your card. Take a minute, relax, put your card in, pull it out when you want to." "Remove card rapidly." Well, the other day I was at Costco at the gas pump, stuck my card in, said, "Remove card rapidly." I thought, "Yeah, screw it." So, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. I got up to about 20 and took my card out. Nothing happens. So I stick it in again and pull it out. Nothing happens. Stick it in again, pull it out. Nothing happens. I said, "Okay, I'll do it your way. I'll do it rapidly." Boom, boom. He said, "See attendant." So I go get the attendant. He comes over. He looks at it. He's looking. He's figuring it out. He gets one of these safety cones and puts it in front of the pump. It says, "You're going to have to go to another pump. This pump is broke. I'm going to have to recalibrate it." And so that's how you shut down a machine, you know. You know, Dr. Paul used to talk about, we're told when we go to heaven that we're going to have a pre-admission interview with God to see if we're going to stay or not. And he said he likes to imagine that God is saying, "Have you enjoyed life down there?" And so he's projecting this, and God asking this guy if he enjoyed life down there. And the guy says, "Well, I don't know, God. You didn't tell me that." He says, "Well, that's all right. I want you to know I've been working like the devil. I've been working hard and giving you an AA program and everything to make your life better. And I want to know if you enjoyed life down there." Guy says, "Well, you know, not really, God." And God says, "Well, you know, if you didn't enjoy life down there, you're probably not going to enjoy it up here. So you might as well just go to hell." So the moral of the story is that our program is meant to be enjoyed. Our book says we absolutely insist on enjoying life. So, my message to you tonight is you better enjoy life, whether you like it or not.